One of the most common challenges I hear from physicians who are starting their business or trying to scale their business is they don't want to feel like a salesperson. You know, we don't like talking about money or business or really anything that's not medical with our patients. I find that that's a very, very common theme for physicians. But the truth is, we have to be in the business of telling patients about us if they're ever going to find us or come in for medical advice. But there are some ways to do that without feeling sleazy or slimy. Believe me, I know, it is one of my toughest challenges. I really, really hate the idea of selling. But on today's episode, we're going to walk through some marketing concepts and give you some really practical tips that you can implement to grow your business without feeling like a salesperson. You're not selling, you're serving. But we've just got to figure out how to let people know about the great work you're doing. Let's kick it. It's feeling so good right now.
Welcome to the Scope of Practice podcast, where we help busy healthcare professionals learn to manage their businesses successfully and master their personal finances. Now, here's your host, Dr. Brent Lacey.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for the Scope of Practice podcast, where you can get the knowledge and resources you need to grow your leadership skills, your business, and your personal finances. Welcome to episode 93. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please be sure to go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now, and also hit the button at the top of the podcast player and turn on the automatic downloads. That way you can listen to these episodes anytime, anywhere, even if you're in a place that doesn't have good cell phone service. Also, don't forget the podcast is now eligible for Category 1 CME credits, and it's free. Just click the link in the podcast description or go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/podcastCME and you can download your CME credits for free. Our sponsor for today's podcast is Student Loan Planner. You may remember Travis Hornsby from episode 14 of the podcast and more recently as a speaker at the Marriage and Money MD Summit. He and his team of student loan experts have helped physicians pay off hundreds of millions of dollars in debt and do it faster than they thought they could. So if you want to become debt-free and get the financial security you deserve, you need a plan. And that's what Travis and his team can do for you. There have been a lot of changes to the federal student loan programs in the last couple of years. And if you don't know what those changes are, you probably need to talk to an expert like Travis. If you'd like to connect with Travis and the Student Loan Planner team, you can go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/studentloanplanner. Or just click the link in the podcast description and it'll take you right to his website. I think you'll really appreciate the expertise that Travis and his team bring to bear in order to help you crush your student loans and regain the financial freedom you deserve. Again, that's www.thescopeofpractice.com/studentloanplanner or just click the link in the podcast description. Today's guest is Sean Mealy. Sean founded Advice Media, now called My Advice, in 2008 to help businesses connect with consumers via digital channels. And since then, the company has brought growth and prosperity to thousands of businesses by connecting them with millions of consumers. He and his team have gravitated toward helping physicians and healthcare practices market their practices more effectively so they can grow their business and be able to take care of more patients. Sean firmly believes that My Advice's success is a direct result of helping their clients to succeed. He's going to discuss the top marketing mishaps that medical practices should avoid, and he can also offer proven digital marketing strategies that healthcare leaders can employ to help their business. So, without further ado, here's my conversation with Sean Mealy. Hey, y'all. I am super excited to welcome my guest today to the Scope of Practice podcast. This is Sean Mealy, founder and CEO of My Advice, formerly known as Advice Media. And I am just really pumped to have him on the show. Sean, thanks so much for joining us today.
Brent, thanks so much for having me. We're huge fans of what you do at Scope of Practice. It's a great, much needed service for all your fellow physicians out there.
Well, you know, it's fun to talk to folks who are genuinely experts in their field, especially when we start talking about things that physicians don't know a whole lot about. I mean, that's the whole point of the show, is to find ways for us to become better business owners, better leaders, you know, better spouses, better masters of our personal finance. And I find that being able to talk to people in other industries is really valuable. I mean, we've had folks on the show that have been, you know, really great at social media that are physicians, but they don't do it for a living. They've gotten good, but there's a big difference between amateurs getting good at a craft and, you know, genuinely spending your entire life honing that craft. It's just a very different thing. So I love having people on that really know what they're talking about. So I'm super excited to have you on because of that. And I want to just jump right in. I want to ask you, for starters, let's talk a little bit about the why of marketing, just to kind of set the stage. Because I think this is one of those things that a lot of physicians hear this idea and they're like, that's for someone else to deal with. That's a marketing department, which a lot of small practices don't have, or it's, well, that's fine for other people, but who's got the time? I'm busy, you know. But like Simon Sinek says, we got to start with why. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting, I was perusing your website, you know, a couple months ago. And one of the things that you guys had said on your website that I thought was very interesting is that when times are good, you should advertise. And when times are bad, you must advertise. And I think a lot of us are tempted to do the opposite. When we've got business streaming in, we can save money by not marketing aggressively. And when times are bad, we feel like we have to save money. And the advertising budget's one of the first things to get cut. So why should we be advertising in good times and bad?
You know, that is just a fantastic way to start the podcast, right? Because if you think about when times are booming, everything seems easy, everything's going great. You know, it feels like, you know, work is not really work and people are just coming in to the practice and things are easy. But it's actually at that point in time when you're setting the foundation for the future. You know, a lot of what we do is really a longer term strategy. If you think about things that really move the needle for you in today's world, things like reviews, SEO, social media, you can't just flip a switch on that stuff. You can flip a switch on paid advertising. You can dial that up very quickly. You can dial it back down. But a lot of the things that really impact you over time, they take a long time to build. And that's why you should be doing it when times are good. You are in Dallas. How many gastroenterologists are there in the Dallas area?
So there are something like 180 to 220, somewhere around there. It's a tremendously large number.
So 100 and something gastroenterologists, you know that some of those guys are doing this, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that I've actually talked to some folks here on the show who are, as a matter of fact, we had Dr. Brian Dorick from Florida on last year to talk about some of his efforts. And he's in a very large metropolitan area. And just through sheer force of will and just kind of gutting it out, he's topping the charts in his area in terms of patient reviews. And he said that that's translated into unbelievable amounts of business growth for him.
So I listened to that podcast and that was an excellent podcast. I would recommend that all of the listeners, if they haven't listened to it, go back and listen to that because he was really good and spot on. But you know, that's the point. Somebody out there is doing it. Probably multiple people are out there doing it. So if you're not doing it, you're actually falling behind even though times are good.
Yeah, absolutely. And just because we don't know how to do it, I would suggest that you're going to probably tell us that's not a reason to not doing it. It's a reason to learn how to do it. Or it's a reason to hire someone to do it. It's not a reason to not do it. Is that right?
Absolutely. Right. If you're not doing it, you're falling behind. You're not keeping up with the competition. And this world has gotten very competitive for all of us.
So one of the things I'd be interested to know just sort of your overall philosophy on marketing. Is it a singular idea? Is it just this one cog in the wheel? It's like a single brick in your wall that you're building, or is it more like the mortar that's holding all the bricks together? Is it the idea of advertising, or is it a multifaceted thing that involves lots of different parts of your organization?
It is absolutely multifaceted. There are so many different elements that have to work together. But it's not as complex as it sounds. So even though there are lots of different parts, if there is an overarching theme, that overarching theme can be applied in all the different marketing techniques and marketing venues that you want to be in. So you can have that overarching theme in your website. You can have it in your social media. You can have it in your SEO, in your paid advertising. It all links together, but it is multi-part.
So when physicians come to my advice, what are some of the pain points that they are trying to remedy? I mean, I can only imagine you've got to get what sound like the most elementary questions. Like when someone comes to me for swallowing troubles, they don't come in saying, you know, doc, I've been having some dysphagia lately. They come in going, doc, I feel like I'm choking to death all the time. What's going on? Right. And I got to figure out what they're actually trying to talk about. So what are some of the pain points that physicians bring to you? They're like, Sean, you got to help me solve this.
Yes. So we can go through a whole list of them. I'll tell you at the beginning, before we even go through number one, that it all boils down to getting patients in the door, getting revenue to the practice, right? That's what all of this is ultimately about, because physicians are, at least the ones we work with, they're business owners, right? They are concerned about making payroll. They're concerned about paying their mortgages. And this is about getting revenue in the practice, getting patients in the practice.
Yeah. And the thing that I think is really important for us to highlight there, because I know a lot of physicians, and I think not so many that listen to this podcast, but a lot of physicians that are out there that are, you know, maybe not excited about this idea or not engaged in this idea. I think a lot of times people feel almost kind of slimy when they start thinking about doing things like this. Like, we gotta lure patients in. We gotta trap them. We gotta get them to come in. And there can be an aspect of that if your intentions are not well founded. But the truth is that if we don't do this well, if we don't run a business effectively, like you said, we can't make payroll. We can't take care of our employees. We can't take care of our patients. We can't expand our services to take better care of our patients. We can't hire more people to allow us to take care of even more patients. We can't help our primary care docs and our referring docs that are out there. So we have to pay attention to this stuff, not so that we can make a lot of money by having a good business. We want to create and sustain a thriving business so that we can use that to take care of as many people as possible. So paying attention to and mastering these facets of business becomes really important for that goal.
Yeah, it sure does. And I couldn't have said it any better than you just said it. I think I told you before that my sister and her husband are both physicians. And one of the things that she has said over and over again to me is that she wished that she had had some of this training in medical school, because it would have helped her tremendously in her practice.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I think some medical schools may eventually get wise to the idea that this is important and valuable. I know of a couple that are doing that. The dental schools, interestingly, do this a lot better than medical schools do, because the vast, vast majority of dentists will go into some form of private practice after they get out of dental school. That is the norm. Whereas for physicians, we're all over the map. Some people go into the pharmaceutical industry. Some people go to work for a big academic center. Some people go to work for a big hospital corporation like Kaiser Permanente or something like that. And so this is one of those things that I hope that med schools get wise to eventually. But in the meantime, we're going to keep pumping out great shows like this to help coach people how to do it. So I think one of the ways that we can do this that I would be very interested to sort of set the stage is maybe if we can kind of have you coach us through some common problems that you find in the marketing plans or lack of plans, if you will, of various physicians, like of people that come to you and things that you commonly see, and maybe coach us on how to fix that.
Sure, absolutely. So the number one big mistake that we see, and it's the worst mistake you can make, and it's also the one we see most frequently, is having a lame website. Your website is the foundation of everything you do today. So your website has to be attractive. It has to draw people in. You know, there have been a lot of studies on this, and research shows that you have between 2 and 4 seconds to grab somebody's attention when they go to your website. And if you don't grab their attention within 2 to 4 seconds, they leave and they go look for somebody else. So you could have a great referral, but if you have a schlocky website, then that referral won't get confirmed. That person will go look for somebody else who has a more professional image.
Yeah. And there, it's interesting. When I was first starting the scope of practice, I met with a website designer after I spent something like 40 or 50 hours trying to design my own website for it. I was working on a budget, trying to keep myself from going into debt for what was, at least at the time, a hobby. And I watched a bunch of website, you know, tutorials, and did some online courses, and spent something like 40 or 50 hours designing my first website. And it was laborious and terrible both. I was like, well, this is kind of the opposite of what I'm going for. And so it was helpful for me to go and talk to someone. But one of the things that was really interesting when I talked to Joel, the guy that designed the site, when we were kind of going through everything and he showed me his first design, his prototype design for the site, I was a little bit worried about it. Actually, I was like, dude, this looks so good. It's so professional. It's so clean. I mean, does it kind of take away from the sort of scrappy underdog, you know, kind of, you know, bootstrapping it mentality? And he's like, here's the thing. If you want people to take you seriously and take it a professional thing, you need to have a professional look to it. And, you know, I have had so many people compliment the Scope of Practice website, which I don't take any credit for. It was all Joel and his team at Notion. But, you know, the number of people that have commented on it has been staggering to me, but it really does make a huge difference.
Yes, it does. And, you know, here's a fact that not many people know either, is that a website tends to lose efficacy after about 2 years. You know, I was talking with my daughters. They were here for Thanksgiving, and they were telling me that skinny jeans are out, that now you want the flared bottom. I don't know if you've heard that from your wife or not, but this is apparently the new style, and skinny jeans are out. And websites are a little bit like that, too. You know, what is in vogue 1 year, 2 years later might not be in vogue anymore. And conversion elements that worked 2 years ago might not work anymore because too many people are using them. And then technology changes also. So the efficacy of a website starts to decline after 2 years. And so really, you ought to be looking at getting a new website every 2 to 3 years. I mean, 2 years is what we recommend, but 3 years max, really. So this is not something that you can even just do once and set it and forget it. You have to keep refreshing it.
So another thing that I've found that I think I'd be interested in your take on, we had Dr. J.J. Peterson on the show on episode 7 last year. So if people haven't listened to that, go back and listen to episode 7 with Dr. Peterson. He is he has an awesome title and I can never remember. It's like chief of teaching or chief of something like that for StoryBrand. And one of the things that he talked about at length on the podcast was the idea that in addition to being catchy and nice looking and professional, your website needs to be very clear about what you do. And after we had that episode, I started looking at various websites and recognizing, oh my goodness, I've been looking at this website for 30 seconds and I don't know what this company does. That's not good. So have you seen that be a problem for physician websites as well?
Absolutely, right? The content has to be answering the questions that people ask. In fact, we tell people, if you want the absolute best content you could get on your website, sit down, write down the 10 to 15 most frequently asked questions at your practice, and write answers to those questions. And you will have the best content your website could ever have.
So, and that's another problem that I've seen you talk about, at least on your website, is lack of high quality content being another mistake that a lot of physician marketing strategies have. So can you talk to us a little bit about that? What does that look like?
Sure. Well, content is really important for two reasons. It's important for the consumer. The consumer is coming to your website looking for an answer. They have a problem, right? Their stomach hurts. They're afraid they have colon cancer. They don't know. But they're looking for answers. And so they have questions. So answering those questions is critically important for the consumer. On the other hand, it's also important for search engines. Part of the reason you have a website is you want to be found. You want people to find you. And search engines direct people to your website. So what do you think Google's favorite website in the whole wide world of all the millions of websites, what do you think their favorite website is in the whole wide world?
Wikipedia?
Yes. Excellent. You are good because not many people get that right, but it is Wikipedia. And it's their favorite website because it has the richest, best content in the world. So what you want your website to be is you want your website to be the Wikipedia for your profession in your location. So of all the gastroenterologists in Dallas, you want your website to be the best, the Wikipedia of that area.
Gotcha. So if someone looks up gastroenterologist near me or gut doctor near me or something like that, you want to be the person at the top.
Absolutely. Yes, you do.
Okay. So how do you figure out what those questions are then? Because it's going to be different from OBGYN to orthopedics to ENT to podiatry. So how do we figure out what those questions are? Is it just based on what our own patients are already asking, or are we doing some kind of search engine optimization process to figure that stuff out?
So it's both. You know, you will have a set of procedures that you like to concentrate on, or most physicians do. So if an orthopedic might specialize in knee or spine, and those are the questions that are most relevant for that physician, for that practice, right? So those questions are what we should focus on when we create content. And then we can marry that up with what are the most popular search terms that look for that procedure. So if it's a knee replacement, if it's a shoulder replacement, whatever it happens to be, you know, we can find the relevant search terms and incorporate those into the text. So we'll incorporate them into the text, into the title tags, into the images. All of that kind of works together to bring traffic to the site.
All right. So number one, we said lame or inferior website. Number two, lack of high quality content. So here's another one I've seen you guys talk about in some of your blog posts, which people definitely need to go check this out because you got some great, great stuff there. Local listings mess. What is that?
That is what almost every physician practice we ever talk to has. That there are, nobody really knows this, but there are tens of directories out on the internet that, and some of them you've heard of, some of them you've never heard of. Health Grades is one you've heard of if you're a physician, right? And the Yellow Pages is one that's actually quite important that you've probably heard of. But there are lots that you haven't either. And they all have your information. And they have your information because there are these things called data aggregators. They go out and they just comb the internet for data. And they plug it in and they actually push it out to these directories. So even if you haven't gone to one of these directories and filled out that information on your own, it's probably there because the data aggregators have pushed something out. And what happens is that that information is generally not the same across these directories. And that's a problem for two reasons. It's a problem first for consumers. Directories actually send business to your practice. They send consumers to your practice. People find your phone number, they find your address, they find your website address on these directories. And so you want that information to be correct so that consumers can find you and you can help them. They also send signals to the search engine. So the search engines look at all of those directories, compare the information across directories. If that information is the same on all those directories, then it sends a strong signal to the search engines that this is a valid business and that this is valid information about the business. And because all of that is valid, we feel confident presenting the search engine results to people who look for it. If the information is different, and let's say that maybe you've moved offices and there's an old address and a new address, and those are in conflict, or you have two different phone numbers, one's an 800 number, one's a local number. Those are in conflict, right? Those kinds of things will send bad signals to the search engine. They'll feel less confident in the information they're seeing, and therefore they won't present it, or they won't present it as highly.
Interesting. Here's another one. I just thought of this, and now I'm going to make a note to myself right now to go and check and see if this is all correct on my own stuff. But I could see a situation where you have your office, let's say, in an outpatient building somewhere, and then you have a hospital where you cover, and I could see where some of the directories would have you listed by the hospital address and the hospital phone number, and some of the directories would have you listed by whatever your outpatient office is, and they're both technically correct, but they're sending different signals. Like if someone is searching for your name, specifically half the directories say one thing, half the directories say the other thing, and even though they're both technically correct, they don't match up, and you could get penalized for that. Is that right?
Absolutely. You would definitely get penalized for that.
Okay, great. So now I have to go check on that tomorrow.
Or you could just sign up for our local power product.
There you go. I like it. Okay, so local listings mess. That's a big one. Okay, here's another one that I found that you guys had talked about before. And this one, I'm absolutely fascinated to get the whys and the wherefores behind this from you, is failing to utilize paid ads like Google ads to boost your SEO. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just really tuned against advertising. Like I feel so, I don't know. I feel like I need to be so dedicated to not succumb to advertising that anytime I'm scrolling through, if I search for something, let's say for a store or something that, and then the first thing that comes up is a Google ad for that store. And the fourth thing that comes up is the store's actual website, but not the ad, I scroll down and I click on that store. So I'm very assiduously avoiding clicking on advertisements. But from what you guys write about, it sounds like that's a mistake that a lot of physicians make, is just not engaging with Google ads and things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, it turns out that as much as 50 to 60% of people will click on the ad.
No way. 50 to 60%?
Yep. And it's not the same on every page. That's sort of the upper end of the bar. But, you know, if you're in a competitive market for a competitive procedure and there are lots of ads running at the top, you can guarantee that 50 to 60% of the time somebody will click on one of those ads.
Oh my gosh, that's huge. That's a tremendous percentage of your traffic. Plus, If 50% of people are clicking on the ad, that is going to increase the internet footprint and the traffic count for your website. And that by itself is going to tend to make the website itself also rank more highly, right?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And that's a great distinction. Can I go into a little bit of technical SEO here for a second?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, Google does a very good job about keeping its organic SEO team separate from its paid advertising team. And they will tell you that there is no direct relationship between the amount you spend on advertising and your search engine rankings. And technically, that's true. But you just hit one of the indirect relationships where paid advertising does have an influence, right? The more clicks you get on that website, the more traffic that website gets, the stronger signal it is to Google. And so they tend to elevate it over time in the organic search engine rankings. The other thing that happens, and this is really more of a study in psychology, but it's fascinating. If you are advertising and you get a paid advertising listing and you get an organic listing, you get about a 10% lift in click-through because you have two slots there. And that is really more about consumer psychology. They see you twice, they're more likely to click, so you get about a 10% lift. So it can have an impact on your organic traffic, but it is an indirect impact. And Google is very clear that there is no direct relationship, but those indirect relationships do exist.
Well, and that makes sense. I don't know how you would possibly be able to keep it completely separate. So, I mean, it makes sense that there would be some commingling there. Okay, so let's look at another one. And we've talked about this on other episodes. I know we talked about it on the episode with Justin and Kelly Knott last year, but I think it's worth mentioning again. Like I said, we talked about this with Dr. Doric in episode 49 as well. And that is deficient reviews, not having enough reviews of your docs and of your business. So I got to tell you, this is one I kind of came late to the party on this one. Because I remember very deliberately when I was in residency and fellowship and early in practice saying, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go trying to scam for reviews and trying to get as many reviews as possible. If I'm doing a good job, then patients want to review that, then that's fine. But I'm just going to focus on doing a good job. And that was clearly a mistake. I mean, 90% of people find their doctors online before they ever come into the shop. So, I mean, everyone sees those reviews, but it also matters for SEO. So there's a lot of reasons why reviews are important, but maybe you could talk about that. First off, why are we not doing that very well? And then second off, why is it so important for us to have lots of great patient reviews?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the primary reason people don't do it well is most people are afraid to ask, right? There is this stigma. People just are worried about it. They don't want to seem like they're being promotional. They don't want to be self-promotional. And so they're afraid to ask. The reality is sometimes you're going to get a no, but most people will be amenable to at least listening, right? Some people won't post because they don't want their name out there, but a lot of people, if they like you, they'll go out and they'll write something nice about you. And so all you have to really do is ask. And if you do that, you'll get reviews. We've seen it time and time again. The history behind reviews is really fascinating. And I'd like to take 2 seconds and just talk about it because I've been in this business a long time. And this is one of the fastest, quickest changes I've ever seen. You know, when you look at sort of what's happened to reviews in the last 4 or 5, it's done a complete 180. 4 or 5 years ago, fewer than 20% of people on the internet trusted internet reviews. Now, 9 in 10 people not just trust them, but actively look for them for verification that somebody is good. So even if you get a referral, 9 out of 10 of those people are going to look for reviews to confirm that referral for them. So they've become a critically important part of every single physician's toolkit, and you should really have great reviews. And they're really simple to get.
Yeah, I know for our practice, we actually have it integrated as part of our electronic medical record system. So we've got, and I don't know exactly how it works, but they've got some algorithm by which the patients will get sent a text message, I think, or maybe it's an email after a visit saying, hey, you know, please let us know if you have any questions. We're really excited to get a chance to take care of you. By the way, we would love to hear what you think about us. If you don't mind giving us some feedback, you know, here's a link to Google or here's a link to ZocDoc or HealthGrades or whatever. The click rate on that isn't going to be super high, but I mean, if you're a primary care doc, you're seeing I don't know, say 30 patients a day. So that's 150 patients a week, 600 patients a month, 7,000 and change per year, factoring in vacations. I mean, like, you don't have to have a huge click-through rate to get a decent number of reviews. And since nobody's doing it, you don't have to do that many to be at the top of the game.
That's exactly right. You nailed it. And so, you know, it's really interesting that you talk about that integrated system, because that is one way to go, and it's really easy. Right? It does all the work for you. It can put a drip campaign out there. You can text, you can email. And by the way, you should text. You'll get a much higher response rate with text messages than you will with email. Our clients get about a 10 times better response rate via text message than they do via email. But if you don't want to spend that kind of money, there are other solutions out there too that are simple, that would take you 5 minutes a day at the end of the day to upload and send out and put in the same kind of a drip campaign. So it can be very, very cost efficient, and it can take very little time. And it's something that everybody really should do, because it's critically important today.
Nice. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. So we talked about deficient reviews. Number six that I found, just looking around your stuff, you call it the social wasteland, which I feel like that is just social media. Social media just is a wasteland in a lot of ways. There's a lot of great things about social media, but there's just a lot of really bad stuff about it too. But certainly that is an area that we need to embrace, I think, if we're going to be successful in our marketing campaign. I know that's something you guys have talked about a lot. So talk about this social wasteland. What is it, and how do we navigate ourselves out of it?
Yeah, so social wasteland definitely has multiple meanings. It's kind of a funny term, which is why we use it. But you know, a lot of practices don't do social media. And, you know, when I say social media for medical practices, it's really Facebook and Instagram. Those are the two that really matter. You know, potential patients aren't finding you on Twitter. They're not finding you on LinkedIn. You know, those platforms, they're not finding you on, you know, any of the other sort of emerging platforms. But those two are important. And they have, you know, very big user bases, and they have lots of followers. And it's a great way to connect with people in a personal way that, you know, you can't really do on a website. So when people are on social media, they're really looking for information, and they're looking for personality. And so, you know, there are some things that companies like Advice Media, My Advice, can do for you. And there are some things we can't. There are some things that, you know, you really just have to do on your own at the practice level. And so personalize it with, it's the doctor's birthday, or, you know, you've had a patient who's been with you for 10 years and it's his or her birthday. Right? Those kinds of, you know, fun sort of personal things that show who you are and what's important to you. You know, if your local high school football team just won the conference championship, right? Put something out about that. It doesn't have to be all medical information all the time. In fact, if it's all medical information all the time, you'll really turn people off. So you should have some medical information combined with some personal information that really lets people see that you're warm, you're a real person, and connect with you.
Nice. What do you think about some of the newer platforms like Snapchat or TikTok, things like that?
So we haven't seen any value in those platforms yet. You know, if you really want to be, you know, sort of heavily out there and heavily promotional, and I don't mean promotional in a bad way, promotional can be good too. You know, you could use a platform like Twitter. That has a lot of followers, and you can really do a lot with that. But really, Facebook and Instagram are the two that we've seen move the needle for people.
No, that's really good. Okay, so let's move on to another one that I think is probably the kind of thing that people, when they hear this, are going to go, well, yeah, duh, that's obvious. But, and I think most websites are pretty hip to this, and really even just sites like WordPress are pretty good at helping people navigate this, and that's being a mess on the mobile devices, right? So I don't know what percentage of websites are navigated to on mobile devices, but it's got to be high. I mean, we are on our phones all the ever-loving time, especially as physicians, but all of our patients are, basically everybody has a smartphone. The days of, you know, those Nokia bullet phones and the Motorola Razors, that's pretty much gone. Everyone's got an iPhone and an Android. And so everyone's on the internet all the time. And there's nothing that's more frustrating than having a website that is optimized for your computer shrunk down to a 7-inch screen, and you're sitting here with, you know, like binoculars and you know, a slide rule trying to figure out how to navigate yourself around this screen. It's a huge pain in the neck, but you know, a lot of places have made it a lot easier to do that, but that's still something that I see some of the older websites just have not brought that into the 21st century. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. And that would be the primary reason to upgrade an older website, besides security concerns, is that it doesn't work well on mobile. So more than 50% of all website interactions today take place on a mobile device. So think about it this way. You know, let's say that you just moved to town, right? You're new in town. And, you know, we meet on the side of a soccer field because both our kids play soccer. And you say to me, you say, hey, Sean, I'm new in town. I need a physician. I need a gastroenterologist. Who do you use? And I tell you, I use Brent Lacy, right? What's the first thing you are going to do when I tell you that?
You're going to type that in a Google search.
Right. And you're going to be on the side of a soccer field and you're going to have your phone and you're going to do that Google search on your phone, right? And that is why more than 50% of interactions are on phones today. So it's really critically important. If you don't have a good experience on a mobile device, then you're losing more than half of your potential business right there.
And it's so easy. And like you said earlier, you have 2 to 4 seconds for people to, you know, buy into the idea that you're a website they want to stick with. So if you're a slow loading website, or if you get, or if someone opens up your website and they're like, scroll, I can't figure out what this guy's about, whatever, I'll just go backwards, go back to Google search. What was the second thing? Right. And they skip it. You know, we just have no attention span.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. So, mobile is critical for sure.
Yeah. And speaking of the Google search, that was another thing that came up when I was doing some research on the topic, and I forget the exact percentages, but it's something like 90 plus percent of people who select something select a website off of a Google search, selected off the front page of the Google search, like the first 10 items. You get to page 2 and I think it's down to 3 or 4%. You get to page 3 and it's less than 1%. So you pretty much need to find yourself on page 1 and preferably in the top 3 of any Google search to have any hope of driving any traffic to that page. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. And your numbers are good. You know your stuff. So that's very impressive. One of the things that I think is important to consider, though, is, you know, a lot of times when people think about being ranked on the first page, they want to be ranked for one, you know, very specific term, like enterologist, right? That is the most frequently searched term. You know, we looked at enterology today, and it turns out that there are over 300,000 searches for enterologist, over 300,000 for enterology, right? But one of the things to keep in mind is that a lot of times when people are using a generic term like that, they're starting primary research. So you really do want to be on the first page for those terms if you can be. They tend to be super competitive. And if you are in a large metropolitan area and you have lots of people going for that, you're going to have to spend a lot of money to be ranked for the very generic terms like that. A lot of times it's easier to get on the first page for more complex terms. So terms that have multiple words, we call them phrases, right? Search phrases instead of search terms. We call them long tail keywords. And speech comes into this too, because people are starting to talk into their phones, search terms. So you might have something like, I need a doctor because my stomach hurts, or find a gastroenterologist near me. You know, these multi-word phrases can be a lot closer to conversion. So when somebody uses a general term like enterologist, they're starting primary research typically. When they're using a long tail word that's very specific, they're much closer to wanting to actually book an appointment. And so those will have higher conversion rates. So even though they don't have as much traffic, because they have higher conversion rates, they could do just as well. And in some cases, they can even do better. So that's really important to keep in mind. You know, when you're talking about first page rankings, also pay attention to those long tail keywords, to those complex phrases, because those can actually be quite good for your business.
Gotcha. Okay. So then, you know, so if I was a urologist, let's say, then I might not be able to rank for urology in the Atlanta area. That may be really, really tough to get, but maybe I could rank for something like, how do I know if I have a kidney stone? Or when do I need to start screening for prostate cancer or something like that?
Absolutely. Yes, those are great examples.
Awesome. Okay. And that right there, those are titles of blog posts right there, right? How do I know when I need to start screening for prostate cancer? I mean, any urologist can write an article about that in about 12 seconds because we've all given that speech to I'm not a urologist, but you know, every urologist has given that speech to their patients. So that ought to be something easy to do. And if you have 15 questions like that, just pick, you could even do that in the course of like a week or something. Just go through and, you know, write down on a list, you know, what was the first question your patient asked you, or what was one of the big questions your patients asked you? And then just make a list of all those and write one blog post answering each question and throw it up on your website. And they're not going to all be top hits, but some of them will be. And the more you do, the more traction you'll start to build.
Absolutely. And that is the greatest way to build content on your website, is to answer those common questions and get it out there for the search engines and the consumers to see.
Okay. So now we've got people that are coming to the website, right? So we've mastered the mobile. We've gotten on social. We are using Google Ads effectively. We've got our local listings figured out. We've got high quality content. Our website is awesome. Okay, so now we've got people in there. They're looking at us. Now, how do we convert them from visitors to patients or clients? Like, how do we get them to actually go from just browsing to calling to make an appointment? What's that process look like?
Yeah, so that is, you know, can be super complex. And those conversion tactics change over time. I mean, there are three basic things that we put in play on a website, right? It's your phone number, it's contact forms in different locations and different types of forms, and it's chat. And so you should be doing all three of those things, but the way that you use them can change over time. So the location of the contact form, for example, the way that chat interacts with people. You know, the most chats today are artificial intelligence. So the good ones are artificial intelligence. So they can run 24/7 and you can, you know, sort of learn as you go what works better. So chat gets better and better for your website over time. Those things all, you know, keep changing. But the three key elements are phone number, contact forms, and chat.
Gotcha. Okay. So we need to make it easy for people to get in contact with us. And that makes a lot of sense. And you know, I can only imagine how frustrating it would be to go through all this work. If you're ready, if you're a customer, or if you're at a store, like an online store, and you look at all these reviews and you're like, yeah, great, I got this. This is definitely what I want. I've seen all these people that are super happy with this product. It's fantastic. Let's buy it. And then there's no way for you to actually buy it. Like, well, what the heck? Okay, well, I guess I'll go buy it on Amazon. Right. So you gotta have a way for people to contact you. I like it.
Yeah.
Like
and that contact has to be super simple, right? If it's a form, it should be very prominent in the piece that somebody is reading. If it's chat, it should always be available on the website in a discreet manner down in the bottom right-hand corner. Your phone number should always be in your header. These things should always be visible so that nobody ever has to look for them. And that's part of the beauty of the simplicity.
So the two things that keep people from doing things in general are going to be time and money. And physicians, frankly, don't have a lot of time. And a lot of us are pretty tight-fisted and don't, you know, want to spend money on stuff unless we're fairly confident there's going to be a high return on the investment. So how do we get started with this stuff? Is this the kind of thing that we should be trying to DIY it and try to learn as much as we can and just kind of, you know, go create some websites and go create Facebook social accounts and different things? Or is this something that it's complex enough that we need to be thinking about hiring a professional to do it for us? Or does it just depend on the situation?
So, you know, it's really not that complex. And, you know, most physicians I've ever met are very bright people and they could figure out how to do this. But I think the person who actually, you know, can do this and do it well and be a good physician is a rare breed. You know, they do exist out there, but it takes a lot of time to do this well. And most physicians don't have the time. And that's really what it boils down to. You know, if you want to do it yourself, you could probably figure it out, but you'd have to dedicate a tremendous amount of time. It takes away from your practice, or it takes away from your family, or it takes away from your hobbies. And it's really a full-time job. You know, we have, you know, years and years of having perfected this. And not just us, there are other people out there who have perfected it too and who are good at it. So, you know, I'm not trying to advertise my advice here, but there are people out here who do it as a profession. Unless you are going to do it and do it to the same standard, you should hire it out to somebody else. Like, I wouldn't give myself a colonoscopy. That would be a total disaster. And you shouldn't do this either, you know, unless you're going to go through all the training and be really, really good at it.
Yeah. And I tend to agree. You know, we just did an episode here not too long ago with Brian Bradley talking about asset protection. I've seen people try to do that kind of stuff on LegalZoom and things like that. And it's like, okay, yeah, you can do it. That doesn't mean it's to be done. And so I tend to agree with you that there's a lot of value in having someone who's professional do this. And as we've just discussed, if we're not doing this effectively, we are definitely going to be losing out. And I know I've talked to a lot of physicians, not to stereotype here, but frankly, physicians in older generations that don't embrace this kind of thing as much as I think they need to. And, you know, they'll say things like, well, social media, that's for the kids. I'm not really into that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, look, 10 years ago, if you're a urologist or if you're a neurologist or something, then you're basically 100% reliant on your referring physicians. But these days, anybody can just self-refer. I mean, I get self-referrals for abdominal pain all the time now. It's something like 25 or 30% of my patients are coming in not having seen a primary care doc. They're just Googling, my stomach hurts, who can help me in this area? And, you know, and then they come in. So, you know,
that's a great example of a long tail keyword, by the way.
Yeah. And the truth is that whoever is on the side of technology is going to win in the end. I mean, technology is advancing, and if we don't ride the wave, we're just going to get crushed by it. So, well, if people are interested in learning more about this kind of stuff and maybe starting the process and they're going, okay, there's a lot more to this than I thought there was. I think I need to talk to someone and get some more advice. What would be a way that people could contact you and continue the conversation?
Yeah. So the best thing is to go to our website, myadvice.com, MYADVICE. It's got a plethora of educational information. Right. And start learning, you know, there's a lot of stuff there, you know, you can do it for free. It's a really great spot to go and just kind of figure out the lay of the land. And, you know, if you want to contact us from there, it's very easy. We use all the same conversion tools on our own website that we recommend for physicians. So you can chat with us, you can email us, you can call us. We're here to help.
Yeah, I highly recommend their site. Even if you don't end up using them for something, just go and learn from their stuff. Trust me, their content is fabulous. And so you can learn a tremendous amount of marketing just by spending a few hours on their blogs and just figuring out what are some of the mistakes that other people have made. Because I guarantee you, you're going to go through and look and go, oh, I don't know if I'm doing that or not. So definitely go check that out for sure. Well, that was Sean Mealy. He's the founder and CEO of My Advice, formerly Advice Media. Like I said, be sure to go check out that website, connect with Sean. He's fantastic. They really know their stuff. Sean, thanks again so much for joining us on the Scope of Practice podcast today. We really appreciate it.
Brent, thanks for having me. It was good to be here.
I never used to care about marketing until I started creating this podcast a couple of years ago. I always used to think about marketing and sales as an inherently sleazy endeavor, but the thing I've come to learn is that it's really not. Think about it this way. If you had a cure for cancer, you would see it as your moral obligation to tell as many people about it as possible. Well, your business is no different. You have a service to offer that people need and that will genuinely help them. You can and should be proud about being able to offer that service. And I hope this conversation with Sean will give you some ideas for how to think about marketing and that you'll use those ideas to help you build an even better business than you have right now. For today's free resource, I've got a great guide called the Conference Attendance Checklist. As 2022 starts picking up, a lot of the national medical societies are getting back to live in-person conferences. If you haven't been to a live conference in a while, you need this guide. Even if you're going to a virtual conference at some point, download this free resource. Conferences offer incredible opportunities, and a little preparation ahead of time can really help make the most of the experience. Just go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/conference-checklist or click the link in the podcast description to download it for free. Also, if you're looking for a Valentine's Day gift for your spouse, this is something you should really think about. You should register for our new online course, Residency Proof Your Marriage. This online course is a self-directed 6-week course that will help you build a strong relationship that thrives despite the stress and strain of a medical career. It'll coach you through setting expectations, communicating effectively, getting on the same page with your finances, and keeping your relationship thriving during a difficult time. Whether you're in medical school, residency, or out in clinical practice, Residency Proof Your Marriage is going to help you build a thriving medical marriage. This is a very inexpensive investment in your marriage. A weekend marriage retreat is going to cost you upwards of $1,000 once you factor in food, registration, lodging, vacation time. But for this course, you get all the great content for a fraction of that cost, and you complete it on your own time as your schedule allows. Just click the link in the podcast description or go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/marriage course to sign up today. The course is also eligible for CME credits, so you can use your employer's CME funds to buy it. Click the link in the podcast description to sign up today. The podcast description will also have all the links to the other resources we mentioned during the show. Thanks so much for joining me on the Scope of Practice podcast. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Scope of Practice podcast at www.thescopeofpractice.com.